From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. It's Tech Tuesday. It's an idea you may have last considered back when men wore bell bottoms and The Love Boat was the most popular show on TV. We're talking about solar power. It's a technology that became more common following the 70s energy crisis, but never really took off in the way its supporters would have hoped. Well, with energy prices once again through the roof and environmentalism no longer a fringe issue, solar is back in a big way. Some estimates suggest that solar could account for 10% of our power needs by 2025 if we invest in it. But for most of us, making the leap to solar can be a daunting idea. A lot of people assume that solar will be really expensive or that they'll be left in the dark if they get a few cloudy days. So what does going solar mean for most of us today? Joining us to help explain that is Roan Rush, president of the Solar Energy Industries Association. Roan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Koja.
Also with us is Jeffrey Gilbert, Chief Technology Officer with the Chesapeake Solar LLC. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And, of course, you can join the Tech Tuesday conversation, 1-800-433-8850, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Most of us are familiar with the big panels that you can put on your home, but we aren't really familiar with how solar energy actually works. What are the various ways in which this energy is harnessed?
There's three primary technologies, Kojo. The first is what are called photovoltaics or PV panels. And these are panels you'll put on your home or your business that directly convert sunlight to electricity. So it converts a photon to an electron. The second technology is solar thermal, and that's the technology we tend to think about from the 70s and early 80s. And that's a that's a solar panel that sits on your roof that generates hot water that's used for cooking, cleaning, showering, and that sort of thing in your home. And the third technology is called concentrating solar power, and this is utility-scale power plants, primarily in the southwestern United States, that would generate hundreds of megawatts and deliver electricity through long transmission lines to population centers like Phoenix and San Diego.
Jeff Gilbert, I think some people have the impression that solar energy is still too expensive to be practical. Is that perception still accurate today?
Well, yes and no. There is an initial capital cost, which is coming down, and with the help of incentives, state and federal, and even county, that can be brought down a lot more. But really, it's best to look at the cost of solar throughout its lifetime. You're going to spend all this money on utilities anyways, whether it's for hot water or for electricity. And in fact, you're going to spend a lot more than the cost of the solar. The solar is a less expensive option in the long run. It's just that initial capital investment that people have a tough time with.
Roan, I'd like to have you chime in on that.
Well, it's interesting. When you look at solar water heating, today, that is a cost-effective option. And for most of us in the D.C. area, you're talking about displacing natural gas. And so when you look at your gas bill, that commodity price has gone up fourfold over the last 6 years. So going solar thermal is a very smart way of actually reducing your natural gas costs. The other is to look at photovoltaics. And I put PV or solar on my house just 2 years ago. And I live in the District of Columbia, and in the last 2 years, the commodity price for electricity has gone up by over 30%. So what was a pretty good investment for me 2 years ago is a great investment for me today.
How did you go about installing solar power in your home? You live in a completely solar-powered home right here in Washington.
Well, it's important to point out, my home is still connected to the grid. So, you know, we net meter, we sell electricity back to the grid on sunny days, and then we pull electricity off at night. And the District of Columbia has a renewable energy demonstration program, which is an excellent program that people of the District of Columbia can apply to and get grants to help lower the upfront cost. Then I literally went into the Yellow Pages, and in fact, went on the internet and identified three different solar installers in the area, had them come out to my house and give me estimates, price estimates on how much it would cost to install. And just like you're, you know, installing a kitchen in your house or retiling a bathroom, you want to get multiple estimates and see who provides the best product.
How long have you had it?
A little over 2 years.
And how much CO2 have you prevented from going into the atmosphere since that time?
We've prevented about 14,000 pounds of CO2, and we generate currently about 75% to 80% of our electricity from our solar system.
How do you go about selling electricity back to the grid?
It's a rule called net metering, and every state develops their own particular sets of rules. But in the District of Columbia, as of just a couple of weeks ago, you can actually have your meter run backwards, or literally you get retail electricity rates for the electricity you provide. So on a day like today, where you're getting more sunlight than you're actually consuming with respect to electricity, your meter physically runs backwards. And then at nighttime, it runs forward. So it really nets out over time.
Do you have to be more conservative about how you use electricity in your home to make sure you don't run out?
Well, it's an interesting question because the first year we had the solar installed, we were very, very frugal, and obviously we installed compact fluorescents and all the rest. And then my father-in-law moved in with us for the first couple of months of January with a space heater in the basement. He came up from Florida. So we ended up using a lot more electricity than we had planned. But yes, absolutely. And it's been a great education for our kids and for the neighbors, not only to learn about solar electricity, but how we can improve the efficiency of our homes.
Jeff Gilbert, one notion that people have is that solar energy is only possible in places that get plenty of sunlight. Is that true? How does a homeowner know if he or she gets enough sun for a solar-powered system to work?
Well, we're looking for about 6 hours of unobstructed sunlight throughout the day, and putting solar panels on the roof is the most common location. So we're looking for a roof that faces generally south, and it gets full sunlight through the middle of the day. Before 9 o'clock in the morning or after 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it really doesn't matter because the sun isn't going to be shining on the plane of the solar panel anyways.
Even in the middle of summer, like a day like today?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that after 3 o'clock, the sun would still be shining.
It is. Oh. It is. But the angle of the sun is going to be at such a shallow angle, you're not really going to be getting much from it after that time anyways, unless your solar panels were to track or to be oriented more towards the west.
Jeffrey Gilbert is Chief Technology Officer with Chesapeake Solar. He joins us in the studio for this Tech Tuesday conversation on the use of solar energy in our homes, along with Ron Resch, President of the Solar Energy Industries Association. And you can call us at 800-433-8850. Have you made the leap to solar in your home or business? What has your experience been like? You can call and share that with us at 800-433-8850, or you can send email to Kojo, K-O-J-O, at WAMU.org. Ron Resch, it's my understanding that you used rebates and tax credits to defray some of the cost of your system. How much did it end up costing you?
Our out-of-pocket cost for our system on our home was about $15,000. And the beautiful thing there is we built it into our mortgage. So that, although our mortgage went up by about $67, $68 per month, we were able to displace about $100 of electricity. So we had a positive cash flow from day one of $32, $33 a month. And unfortunately, with the rising gasoline prices, that's all gone straight into the tank. But it does show that if you use a financing structure, a long-term financing for solar, you can have a positive cash flow from day one, so the economics can work in your advantage right from the beginning.
When you said it cost about $15,000 out of pocket, that included, or that was made possible by what I consider to be a significant rebate and tax credit, like a $17,000 rebate.
Yeah, that's right. The District of Columbia in the REDP program at that time offered rebates up to 50% of the cost of the system. So our system was $35,000 originally. We got a $17,000 grant from the District of Columbia, and then there is an available 30% tax credit from the federal government. For homeowners, it's capped, unfortunately, at $2,000, but for businesses, it's uncapped, so it's a true 30% tax credit. When you put those incentives together, it really does help lower the upfront cost.
It's my understanding that the federal tax credits may expire soon.
That's correct. Unfortunately, when they were created, they were only created for 2 years, and we've only had a one-year extension. So they are set to expire December 31st of this year. Congress has had 12 votes on trying to extend these tax credits over the course of the last year. But unfortunately, we're stuck in a very partisan political battle here. And these tax credits, we've not been able to get them passed yet.
Jeff, let's say I want to take a cue from Roan and go solar. How long will it take me to install this residential solar energy system?
Well, the actual installation process is about 2 to 3 days. But the full process from when someone like you would call us up we go through a bit of an interview over the phone, and then one of our salespeople will come out to your home and take measurements and look at the solar resource. And then once you sign on the dotted line, then we go through a procedure. We put you in queue to install your system. And very commonly during the summer months, it may be around 2 months for the whole, beginning to end.
But the two-day process sounds to me like a lot shorter than it takes to get cable, internet, and telephone in your home all at the same time.
That's right, yes.
You can't be losing too much time. Allow me to go to the telephones. Here is Matt in Silver Spring, Maryland. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I just wanted to let everyone know, we live in Montgomery County, and we have both solar photovoltaics and solar hot water installed on our home. And annually, usually the first weekend in October, there's actually a tour organized, solar tour, where you can go around. A lot of people who have these sorts of devices volunteer to let people walk through their homes, walk on the roofs, and you can actually see what the installations look like and hear from the actual homeowners themselves what their experiences are with various companies that they've had or if they've done it themselves.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us, Matt. It allows me to have you, Ron Resch, underscore once again the fact that even though there is an upfront cost here, when you make a calculation over the long run, you will be saving money on your energy bills.
Right. That's exactly right. Think of it as if you're buying a brand new car with all the gasoline it's going to need over its entire lifetime. Yes, it will cost more upfront. But if you made that decision 2 years ago at $2 per gallon, you'd be the smartest guy in the neighborhood, right? You have made a physical hedge against rising energy prices. And that's exactly what you do with solar. Yes, there's a larger upfront cost in the beginning, but you have fixed your electricity prices for the next 20 to 30 years. Remember, this product comes with a warranty for performance for 25 years in most cases. There's nothing else that you're going to put on your house or install someplace in your life that comes with that kind of warranty. So it gives you literally a guarantee of fixed electricity prices for the next two decades.
Jeff Gilbert, do you need to put on a new roof before the solar panels are installed?
99% of the time, no. We would be interested in a roof that's in bad repair and really needs to be replaced. Within the next couple of years, we certainly wouldn't want to put solar panels down on an old roof only to have to remove it and then get a new roof. So we say, in the 12 to 14 year age time frame, the homeowner may want to consider getting a new roof before putting on the solar, because the solar is going to last 20 to 30 years, as Ron said.
Back to the telephones, Gregory in Washington, D.C. Gregory, your turn. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by what you're talking about. I live in D.C. and sort of been experimenting with a small solar package that I purchased from a vendor out in California that was designed for RVs. And it's sort of a it's an off-grid system, because it's basically for a garage that's in a back alley. It doesn't have, Pepco wanted $60,000 to just run power down to give me a couple lights and run a couple of garage doors. And so I looked at this option, and for a few grand was able to put together a package that works quite well, generates the power needed to run with an inverter, to run a couple of garage door openers and give me some lights. I used the compact fluorescents. The issue I've run into in the past year is that in the wintertime, it was dying on me. I basically discovered that the angle of the sun was very different in the wintertime, and in a back alley in D.C. I was having a lot more trouble. I just wonder if your guests could comment at all on anything I can do to try and rectify the situation as it relates to the sun. I heard you mentioning that before 9 o'clock and after 3 o'clock, that the sun is at such an angle that it doesn't really give you the juice you need. And I also heard you mention something about needing 6 hours of solid sun in the daytime. Any other pointers like that that I can take into account as I'm trying to solve getting the system to work good for me in the middle of the winter?
Jeff?
Sure, Gregory. One thing that you might consider trying to get that solar panel higher up, if there are any shadows cast by trees or other buildings, you want to get the solar panel up so it's not being shadowed at all. You might also consider getting a second solar panel next to it, just to augment the fact that there's shorter hours in the wintertime.
And another option for you, Gregory, is actually to look at how you want to angle the solar panel. If it's on a roof right now, it's on a fixed plane. And as the sun is lower in the sky in the winter, you may want to actually adjust that panel so it's standing more upright, more vertical, so you're getting more direct sunlight on the panel. That can actually improve the efficiency quite a bit.
That's great, guys. Those are all things I've considered, but it's good to hear them confirmed. And are you saying that I might consider having sort of a seasonal adjustment to the panels so that as I get into the fall, I would sort of cock up the panels a little taller?
In your situation, that would apply, but I think for 99% of the solar installations out there, it's unnecessary. But it sounds like for you, that would give you just the extra juice you need.
That's great.
Hey, Gregory.
Well, thanks so much. Yes.
And Gregory, thank you very much for your call. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Kojo. All right, bye-bye.
Ron, obviously individual homeowners can have a big impact by going solar, even if just in their garages. But it seems that large-scale production is key to getting solar to really take off. Are we seeing those kinds of large-scale investments at this point?
We are. And what's exciting is you're seeing companies that started off in our national laboratories or at our research universities go commercial and now start to scale up in a very significant way. In addition, you're starting to see a lot of the high-tech companies coming from Silicon Valley use some of the technology and some of the engineering capabilities they developed in the high-tech sector, apply them to solar. So just 2 weeks ago, we had announcements from Hewlett-Packard, Intel, and IBM that they're all making major investments in solar. You know, over the course of a year, if one of those companies stepped up, that would be a big deal. But for all three doing it literally in the same week, that's a pretty clear sign that things are different in the solar industry today and certainly are going to change quite even more so in the near future.
I've read that there are concerns about transporting solar energy or storing it for long periods of time. Does solar have to be used quickly and close to where it's made for it to be economically feasible?
Well, it depends on the technology that you're using. So photovoltaics generate what's called direct current, and direct current needs to be converted to alternating current to be used in your home. And so what you tend to do, the great advantage of photovoltaics is its distributed generation. You can use it on site. And so it's used at the point of consumption versus coal, for example, in which it's used at a power plant 200 miles away and needs to go over long transmission lines. The challenge really becomes in how do you store electricity? You can store heat, but it's more difficult to store electricity. For homeowners, the simple solution is batteries. And there's a great selection and options for technologies that you can use in your home today to have battery backup, meaning simply making sure that if the grid goes down, you can keep the lights on in your home. And I think you're starting to see that become a much more popular option for residential solar installations simply because the grid is a lot less reliable today than it was just a few years ago.
Here's Marianne in Fairfax, Virginia. Marianne, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you for this great show, Kojo. I think it's very, very helpful. I live in Herndon, Virginia, actually, and I've been talking to my husband about maybe switching to solar, but have not been very successful in convincing him why it would be a good idea. And the other thing, too, is one of your guests talked about this program that currently in effect in Washington, D.C., where he uses his solar power and then he gets to sell back his electricity, I guess?
Yes.
And does the same program exist in Fairfax, Virginia? And how do we go about doing that?
Tech Tuesday, keeping families together and healing marriages. Go right ahead, Jeff Gilbert.
Unfortunately, Virginia does not have any incentive programs other than having the net metering program in place. So you have the ability to run your electric meter backwards, but there are no incentives as far as rebates or grants.
Oh, that's bad. Okay.
Yeah. As for what Marianne should be telling her husband, Jeff, in order to sell him on solar energy, could you provide some marital advice?
Gosh, there's wonderful, a big list of reasons to consider solar. Of course, there's environmental reasons. There are bragging rights. It is an investment. It is a tougher investment in Virginia without the incentives in place. So you'll have to spend more up front and the payback or the return on your investment will be a bit more. You may want to start with an energy audit to decrease the amount of consumption that your home has as a starter, and then look at solar water heating as a first step, and then look at photovoltaics, which is a more expensive investment.
Ron Resch, how were you persuaded?
Well, I actually had to do a little persuading. Originally, I took my wife around to look at some of the solar installations in the area, and we had some concerns. I mean, our house is, you know, is a big investment, and we love it very much, and we were concerned about the aesthetics. And so we did some research on the product lines that are available and ended up going with a U.S. company that makes a an all-black panel that is, you know, very, very efficient, that we fell in love with and integrates beautifully into our roof line. So, you know, Marianne, what I would also suggest, you know, to your husband, and I'm not sure if you have kids or not, but I've found that having solar on our home is one of the greatest educational opportunities you can provide for your children. And it's not just the environmental, it's not just the energy, but it's showing really your leadership as parents in taking steps in providing a domestic source of energy, a clean source of energy. And it's not just a smart economic investment, but it's a very smart educational investment for your kids as well.
Marianne, thank you very much for your call. Good luck to you.
Well, thank you so much. And I think I'm going to start with the water heater, like the other guy mentioned. I might just start small steps, right?
There you go. Small steps, but you'll eventually get there. If you're looking for the incentives that are available in your state or jurisdiction, you can come to our website at kojoshow.org, and you'll find a link right there. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more on solar power for your home on this Tech Tuesday. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
Sun, I say it's all right.
This is WAMU 88.5. I'm Matt McCleskey. At 2 o'clock today, it's Tell Me More.
Next time on Tell Me More, our money coach, Alvin Hall. He'll share financial tips and his own advice on being successful.
I remember saying to myself, sort of quoting Scarlett O'Hara, as God as my witness, I will make this business successful. I will.
That's Alvin Hall next time on Tell Me More.
And that's coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon here on WAMU 88.5. Then at 3, it's Fresh Air.
On the next Fresh Air, how Wall Street caused the mortgage and credit crisis. We talk with Paul Molo, author of Chain of Blame. Also, the mortgage crisis's lesser-known victims, pets. We talk with Stephanie Shane of the Humane Society. She rescued two dogs who were given up for adoption due to foreclosures. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock today on WAMU 88.5.
I'm David First, host of Metro Connection, inviting you to join WAMU 88.5's The Conversation. Our social network allows you to connect with other listeners, launch discussions about news you heard on WAMU 88.5. Plus, we have quick links to many of our daily reports and programs, allowing you to catch up with your favorite programs on your schedule. More information is at conversation.wamu.org.
And now the Kojo Nnamdi Show continues at 12:29.
It's a Tech Tuesday conversation on solar energy for our homes with Jeffrey Gilbert, Chief Technical Officer of Chesapeake Solar LLC, Roan Resch, President of the Solar Energy Industries Association, and joining us now in the studio, Jeff Morley is co-founder of Mount Pleasant Solar Cooperative. Jeff Morley, thank you for joining us. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Jeff, it's my understanding that Mount Pleasant Solar Co-op is pretty much the brainchild of your son Diego and one of his friends. Could you tell us how this idea came about and how exactly it will how will it work?
Well, it started a couple of years ago when Diego and Walter were bugging me to go see the Al Gore movie.
Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, and they were like, and I was like, oh, you know, I didn't want to go. And so they finally dragged me, and I was like, wow, you know, this is really amazing. Like, we should do something. And so we started talking among ourselves, you know, what if we had solar power? I got to talking to Walter's mother, Anya Schulman, and we were saying, you know, really, if you look at Mount Pleasant, you have all these houses, row houses, close together, flat roofs. We're on a hillside. The hillside faces south. It's like, if we can't do solar power here, I mean, that's crazy. This should be the ideal place. So that was really the original brainchild. And we started to go out and we talked to contractors like Chesapeake Solar, and we educated ourselves about how does it work? How could we, you know, go there? And the one thing that we kind of kept in mind the whole time was you know, I mean, some people can go out and just write a check for $25,000 or, you know, to get a solar installation. None of us were really in that position. So we were, from the start, our goal was, how could we do this and get some economies of scale? We have 50 people go in, right? You could install all these solar panels all in the same day. Well, that should save money right there.
Yeah.
If we bought all the solar panels together, that should save money right there. So, and as we've developed the organization, we've learned exactly how to do that. We've partnered with a local energy company called Switch. And so we're starting to put together a package for our members where you'll be able to sign up for solar power, have it on your roof. We'll all get it at once, and it'll be a lot cheaper than if any of us acted individually.
The package will include purchasing, financing, and installation for the members of that co-op. Your project has been slowed down by some, well, political and bureaucratic challenges, can we say? Can you talk a little bit about your discussions first with Pepco and then with the D.C. City Council on this issue?
I mean, this is an innovation, and that's what we're talking about today is, you know, we've all gotten our energy, you know, in a certain way for 50 or 100 years, and solar power is really breaking with that. And so it's not so simple to start. And as we realized trying to put this together, it was going to take a lot. You need to know how to take advantage of all the incentives that are out there. So we had hoped to partner with Pepco. One thing that's important for our members is, you know, if this could be very simple, you don't even have to have a new bill to pay every month. If you could pay it through your Pepco bill, we thought that would be ideal. And we've had some useful discussions with Pepco, and they're just not, you know, they're not quite ready to go there yet. We are very supportive of the City Council bill, which was approved unanimously on first reading on the 1st and is coming up for a final vote next week. This, you know, creates a renewable energy utility for the city and has the incentives that we think can really, you know, make this happen for our members. So, you know, we'd like to work with Pepco. We don't have a problem with them, but we don't have to work with them. We're determined to make this happen regardless, and we think with the passage of the City Council bill that this will really be doable.
Well, according to the article we saw in the city paper, Pepco was at first eager to jump on board, but later backtracked and felt apparently that it might not be profitable to buy solar-generated electricity from projects like the Mount Pleasant Co-op. But as you said, you're continuing to work on it, and we spoke this morning with a spokesperson for Pepco who told us the company has a, quoting here, blueprint for the future that it's waiting for D.C. officials to approve. That blueprint includes a variety of initiatives to help people better manage their energy use, including smart meters and a program that would help subsidize customers who want to go solar. So clearly, that may be something that is happening in the future. For other neighbors that also want to consider this sort of initiative, what would you say were the key aspects to keep in mind here?
Well, I think, one, that by acting together, we can really hold down the price. This doesn't have to be a boutique or a high-end option. This can be an option for any homeowner. Like Roan was saying before, If we can set this up right, you're going to have positive cash flow almost from the start. Under our calculations, you might pay a premium of up to 10 or 15%, but only for a year or two. We're at a very conservative estimate. This system pays for itself within 7 years. You can have a positive cash flow in a much shorter time than that. So the first thing is, it's really doable. The second thing, by acting together, we can get a lot of this done very quickly. So, you know, for anybody in Mount Pleasant, we think this is a great investment in your property. It's a very positive move to make in terms of climate change. It's like the right thing to do.
Let's go to Donna in Cabin John, Maryland, who I think may have a question for you, Jeff. Donna, go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you?
Well.
are you there?
Yes.
Oh, you've got...
Yeah, go right ahead. Please go right ahead, Donnie. You're on the air.
Okay, I couldn't hear. Anyway, I live in a single-family cooperative housing, and we are all, there's a few of us getting together, and we want to, quote-unquote, greenize our cooperative. And we're looking into maybe buying solar in bulk, and I thought maybe you'd have some ideas, or maybe you'd even want to come and speak with us. It's about 100 units, 100 single-family housing units. But we're a cooperative.
Jeff Morley, former newsman, now ambassador for solar power.
and are your houses detached houses?
Are they? Well, there's six They're small houses, but they're all single-family houses. They're not townhomes. We're one of the only ones like this in the area, and actually in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Well, I salute you for your collaborative action. I think maybe Jeff Gilbert here could answer a little better about, you know, what your options are in terms of of going solar.
And Donna, we'll do after you get off, we'll put you on hold and have someone take your number in case anybody needs to call.
That would
back
be
about
great
anything.
Because I'm at a restaurant and I really can't hear very well, so that would be great.
Well, see if you can listen to Jeff Gilbert. He's not long-winded.
Well, the first thing we would consider is each of the homes. You know, we could do a site assessment for each of the homes and find out which are good candidates, and then, you know, as Jeff Morley was saying, you get a package put together where we could look at the financing and what type of systems, you know, work best for each of the homeowners. There are some great advantages of having a package together that includes financing so that, you don't have to incur the large upfront cost. But I would say talk to your neighbors, find out how many are interested, not just generally interested, but really ready to put their money down, and then approach a local area contractor.
Donna, thank you for your call. As I said, we're going to put you on hold and get your phone number and pass it on to our guests in the event that they'd like to call you. We got this email from Ed in Montclair, Virginia, which Ed describes as a very tightly controlled community. What about homeowners associations, covenants, and zoning? What kind of hassles do people usually face, and where have your guests run into the most problems? Ron Resch?
Yeah, this is a pretty substantial problem across the country. Homeowner associations tend to have very strict covenants that prevent the use of solar in the same way they prevented the use of cable TV in the sense of satellite TV in the past. Congress this past year introduced two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, called the Solar Act. And it was designed to restrict or prevent, frankly, homeowner associations from restricting the use of solar energy. We think that it's that each individual homeowner should have the right to declare their energy independence, to put solar on their own homes, and that these homeowner associations shouldn't have these restrictive covenants. The reality, though, is almost every homeowner association uses the same set of bylaws and rules that's been in place for 20 years. And on page 227, it says, "Thou shalt not put solar panels up on the roof because it affects the aesthetics." So it is a problem, and certainly Congress is starting to get involved to make sure that this issue goes away.
Jeff Gilbert, you wanted to address this?
Sure, yeah. I'm convinced that a long time ago, somebody actually wrote the covenants for their neighborhood, and ever since then, people have simply said, "Oh, what do you have? Oh, we'll use that." And somewhere they put in no solar on roofs. We had a few good examples of this. One wonderful client down in Anne Arundel County who wanted solar water heating and photovoltaics on her house. And we put up the solar water heating system. And this was in a very nice neighborhood, large homes, you know, where you can see that landscaping is very well kept. And then we got a notification from our client who had received a nasty gram from their association saying, "Cease and desist, you know, there's legal action. We will come down on you, you know, no more of this." And so they said, "Well, what can we do?" He said, "Well, there's a Maryland solar access law that says that they can't do that to you." And so a couple weeks went by, and then we got a call back from them, and they said, "Okay, continue."
And so, Jeff Morley?
We've had an initially positive response from our issue in the city is historic preservation.
Oh, yeah.
We're in a historic preservation district. But we have been told that as long as the panels are not visible from the street, we don't have a problem on the historic preservation front. And with the type of architecture we have in Mount Pleasant, you have a peaked roof in the front, and we don't think that the panels are going to be visible at all from the street. So we don't think that's going to be a problem in our case.
Is there anything you'd do differently in setting up this co-op if you knew now what you knew, if you knew then what you know now?
No, I mean, we only got here by educating ourselves about all aspects of the business, and that learning curve is natural. What we're hoping is that now that we've done this and if we can get going, then we can show other neighborhood groups how they can do the same thing in the city, and we can pass on all that we learned very quickly, and other people can pick up on this.
Here now is Scott in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hi, Scott. Hi, Scott. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay. We got a solar hot water system put on our house, in February. I live in Montgomery County, and it's an evacuated tube hot water system. It has like a 4-inch diameter tube that's about 8 feet long and an array of 16 of them. And we also got a new water tank put in, a 120-gallon tank, because our original motivation was that we were just running out of hot water. And I'm kind of a tech guy, so I put a data logger on there so I can measure temperatures over time and make graphs. And I actually put all my results on the web. I made a website because I was kind of excited and I wanted to show people what it was like for a homeowner to do this. My website is solar-hot-water.org. And I put performance data on there. And since March, we're saving kind of like $40 a month off of our electric bill. And but the average homeowner could not touch it at all, and it would just run automatically. So you don't have to get into the technical aspect of it. I had kind of a comment and a question. The comment was, what struck me when we were going through this whole process was it would be nice, you know, when we bought our house, we had a termite inspection. Wouldn't it be nice to have like a solar inspection where someone would come out and say if your house was amenable or not to PV or hot water, and that would at least put that option in front of the homeowner so that at the beginning of the loan they could, you know, build it into the loan and then have a system installed when they bought the house, and then that would give them the most leverage when they were paying off.
Well, Scott, all I'm seeing around this table are nods of approval. Jeff Gilbert.
What a fabulous idea. It's something that we were working on as a marketing strategy, but then the housing market kind of shriveled up and we've drifted away from that. But what a fabulous idea. It's, you know, you got to have an energy or a home inspection done anyways. Why not add, you know, energy and solar to that same mix?
Given rising energy costs, I suspect a lot of people listening to this broadcast just got a very good idea if they're involved in buying a new home. Scott, thank you very much for your call. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue this conversation. Jeff Morley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Jeff is co-founder of the Mount Pleasant Solar Cooperative. You can still call us at 800-433-8850 or send your email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Namdi.
When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken. So I hung my head and I cried. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take
coming up at 1, how corruption here compares to corruption there. Do our corporate and political leaders live up to the standards we set for those abroad? Plus, it's your turn to weigh in on the day's news. From tainted tomatoes to Wall Street woes to kids and cholesterol, share whatever's on your mind. Today at 1 on the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5.
Good afternoon, I'm Matt McCleskey. At 2 o'clock today, join us for Tell Me More.
Next time on Tell Me More, our money coach, Alvin Hall. He'll share financial tips and his own advice on being successful.
I remember saying to myself, sort of quoting Scarlett O'Hara, as God as my witness, I will make this business successful. I will.
That's Alvin Hall next time on Tell Me More.
And that's coming up at 2 o'clock today here on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from the Association of American Railroads. Today's freight railroads are committed to working hard for the environment by moving a ton of freight 436 miles on just 1 gallon of fuel. More online at freightrailworks.org. From Hodgson Consulting, an Ektron Gold partner, providing content management solutions for clients' web-based initiatives. Hodgson Consulting, fueled by technology, powered by people. On the web at hodgsonconsult.com.
It's 85 degrees in Northwest Washington. It's the Kojo Namdi Show continues at 12:45.
Welcome back. It's Tech Tuesday, and we're talking with Ron Resch, president of the Solar Energy Industries Association, Jeffrey Gilbert, Chief Technical Officer for Chesapeake Solar, and Jeff Morley, co-founder of the Mount Pleasant Solar Cooperative, and you, of course, those of you who have called or sent email. We begin with an email from Ron, who said, I could not convince my ex to put on solar power when we needed a new roof. I was very interested in a product that looked like a standard shingle. The same company also makes a thin film roll for a metal roof. I wish all government buildings would use 50-year metal roofs with the roll-on thin film. Why don't we see more of the shingle-type photovoltaic roofs?
Well, the shingles are almost a very natural innovation. I mean, I had these ideas probably 10 years before they became real. It seems like a natural projection. And it's a great idea. Unfortunately, to actually install them takes a bit more labor, takes a bit more knowledge. You have to not only be an electrician to understand photovoltaics, you have to be a solar expert to understand how the sun tracks. Then you have to be a roofer to understand how to install the solar shingles. What we found is that when our clients examined all of what it takes and the prices involved, the many, many, many inquiries turned into actually no sales of those types of products so far.
You know, let's go back to Jeff Morley's experience for a second, Ron. What do you think of his that experience? Do you think solar co-ops are a practical option in most communities?
I think you're seeing a new business model evolve where the communities are getting together and saying, we're having enough. No more rising energy prices. We need to do something. We need to be smarter than our utility. And thankfully, we have flexibility, certainly in two out of the three states in the area. And you're starting to see more and more of that flexibility. So new business models will evolve. So it's not just the cooperatives, but you're also starting to see on the commercial side, companies like Sun Edison out of Beltsville, Maryland, who enter into what are called power purchase agreements, where they might go to a Walmart store and they'll install solar on the roof, but they'll own and operate that solar and then sell the electricity back to the big box store at a price lower than what they currently get from the utility. So it makes good economic sense from day one. And then you really have an expert who knows how to do the installations at low cost, knows how to optimize some of the incentives and the policies to really lower the upfront cost of solar. And we had a caller before, I think it was Marianne, talking a little bit about utilities. Well, there are some very progressive utilities out there that are developing kind of the next generation of the business model for utilities. And Duke Power is one down in North Carolina, and they are going to be installing, owning and operating 100,000 solar systems on residents, so basically on houses throughout their territory. And this is a first step with our goal of going to 500,000 in the next couple of years. So a lot of innovation is very exciting.
Jeff Gilbert?
There's also Lakeland Electric down in Florida who has they have a solar water heating program where they own and operate the solar water heaters and simply sell the BTUs. They sell the heat energy equivalent.
Jeff Morley, did you consider any of these options before deciding to go the co-op route?
We looked at, just to go back to the shingles for a second, we looked at a wide array of things. And like Jeff said, ultimately came back to the conclusion that the cheapest way to go was with a standard 2.23 kilowatt system, four rows of three panels. Just overall, you know, that made sense for us. But when we looked around, we were disappointed that there wasn't a better just, you know, convenient customer choice. And we felt like the utility should be offering that. If they're not going to, well, our thought was, let's go out and create it ourselves.
And all of this because Diego and Walter took him to see a movie. Here we go to John in Haymarket, Virginia. John, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. Two questions. One, I was in Arizona, 340 days of sunlight a year there, and I didn't see any solar panels. Is that because they used to get all this cheap energy from Mexico, Phoenix?
I don't know. Ron Resch?
Well, primarily they're getting cheap electricity from coal. And, you know, the part of the problem in Arizona is they have not had net metering. They haven't had incentives, and they've had very low electricity prices. And it's kind of ironic because they're really the Saudi Arabia of sun in a lot of respects, yet, you know, they're installing so few panels. And let me just give a quick comparison to a place that's not so sunny, and that's the country of Germany. They put in place policy about 6 years ago that provided a 20-year policy that encouraged the use of solar energy. And in Germany, which gets on average about the same amount of sunlight as Anchorage, Alaska, they're installing 8 times as much solar annually as the entire United States. So Germany has figured out how to do that. And in doing so, they've created over 250,000 new green collar jobs in that country, high quality manufacturing, high quality installation. And it's kind of pathetic that a state like Arizona and some of the others in the Southwest aren't capitalizing on the incredible resources that they have. I think you will see that change in the near future, however, simply because even coal prices have gone through the roof recently and Arizona's seeing a massive increase.
Kojo, a personal question now. I have some old solar panels on my roof that I bought back in the 80s when, they had a big energy credit. Sears was pushing them. We've since disconnected them from the system. Is there any way to, do they have any use? Can we hook those up again?
Was that a solar water heating system or a solar electric?
Yes.
Okay, water heating. Just have a technician come out and take a look at them. We do maintenance on systems that are still operating from that same time period. Many of them have been removed or replaced, but some systems last that long. Have them looked at.
John, thank you very much for your call. And we got 2 emails, one from Elizabeth in Fredericksburg and one from Susan, who kind of are asking similar questions. Elizabeth wants to know, how do you find solar installers? Do you look under electrician or what in the local yellow book? And Susan says, we have a house in Howard County, Maryland, and we would like to see what renewable energy sources we could add. How could we get someone to come and help us to assess what would be possible?
Well, I hate to just plug our company. There certainly are a few of us out there. If you go onto the Internet, have access to the Internet, and do a search on Maryland Solar, you should be able to come up with some leads, as well as going to the Solar Energy Industries Association website, and they have a listing of their members. But if I'm surprised that you haven't been able to find dealers right from the Yellow Pages.
And we have a link to that website also. Allow me to go to Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kojo. Great show, and
Thank you.
Look forward to that marital advice show that I'm sure is coming up. I was an applicant in the city for one of the solar grants this past year and was very disappointed at the way that the city ran that program. They didn't have as many funds available as they had first hoped, and this upcoming year, apparently only $150,000 is going to be available from the Public Service Commission. So the Public Service Commission is not doing the kind of job that I think that it can in promoting it in the city. On the good news side, and this is really a question for Roan, which is the recent legislation that was mentioned earlier that Mary Che had put forward, I understand is supposed to expand that program significantly. So let's move the clouds out of the way. What do we have to look forward to in the sunny day as far as how that program's going to work in the city?
So right now in the District of Columbia, you're eligible for what's called a $3 per watt credit. And that would be a grant that would come in at $3 a watt. The average residential installation is going to be $8 to $10 per watt. So it ends up being about a third. And for commercial installations, it's $2.50 a watt. For the remainder of the year, there's about $150,000 available, and the grant program will be coming out with an announcement on the Energy Office website within the next couple of weeks. But as of October 1st, that's when the new calendar year, so 2009 year, starts for the District of Columbia. And we're hopeful that if Mary Che's legislation goes forward, we'll have a whole new budget, and we'll see the funding for let's just call it renewable projects, not just solar, but solar and wind and geothermal and other technologies. There should be a pot of money that's triple or quadruple the size, if not more.
Thanks for your call, Steve. On to Jeff in Washington, D.C. Jeff.
Thanks very much.
We'll have to call you Jeff number 3. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I live in a condo of between 110 and 120 units, and I'm finding it difficult to convince the board to consider solar because of the initial upfront cost, even though there's, I believe, a 30% credit. And I was wondering if the panelists have any suggestions of how to convince the board.
I am interested, Jeff Morley. How did you interest your neighbors in getting involved in this in Mount Pleasant?
There are so many absentee owners. Turned out more into a rental property.
I see. Yeah, you have a little bit of a problem. But Jeff Morley, tell us.
Well, we realized that we really had to master the details of this, because I think if you can master the economics of solar power, you can go back to your board with a pretty well-informed argument that it's probably a very good investment for the building to do in the long run with rising utility prices. I know the economies of an apartment building are going to be very different than the ones we're looking at in a neighborhood of townhomes. But I would imagine that if you can go through, learn about the tax incentives, what's available in the DC solar subsidy program, what's the long-term trend in utility prices, I think if you really educate yourself, you can put together a comprehensive presentation that will at least make them consider it, because I've got to believe that it would be a good investment for such a building.
You probably need to get in touch with as many owners as possible, Jeff. Here's Ron.
Hey, Jeff, one quick suggestion as a resource for everybody. If you go to our website, which is just seia.org, there is a tax manual available, and it outlines both for homeowners as well as for cooperatives and condo owners and businesses the best way and legal way to utilize the tax credit. So that's a really good source of information right from the beginning, and then certainly looking at, depending if you're in Maryland or DC, what the incentives are that are available. And I think that should give you a good financial footing to start with.
Jeff, thank you very much for your call. It's my understanding, Jeffrey Gilbert, that today is a big day for Chesapeake Solar. This evening, the company will be officially announcing that it has joined Grow Solar. What's that all about?
Wow. Yeah, it's an amazing opportunity. What we're seeing in the broader renewable energy industry, solar energy industry in this country, is that a lot of investment dollars are going into the industry. A lot of companies are consolidating and looking for ways to partner and do joint ventures. And that's what we have we found this opportunity to work with Grow Solar. They have been our supplier for a number of years, and we've developed a wonderful relationship. They were mentoring us in our growth, and we just found that it was an amazing opportunity for us to come together and now represent this national company as their regional office.
And Chesapeake Solar fears that it'll be able to do better as a result of that, addressing the region's growing demand for solar. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Gilbert is Chief Technical Officer with Chesapeake Solar. Jeff Morley is co-founder of the Mount Pleasant Solar Cooperative. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Ron Resch is President of the Solar Energy Industries Association. Ron, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Kojo.
Thank you all for listening. You can go to our website at kojoshow.org to see links to all kinds of resources for solar energy. I'm Kojo Nnamdi. Coming up tomorrow on the Kojo Nnamdi Show, is fashion sense a matter of nature or nurture? We look at the multi-billion dollar princess industry and what it teaches kids about society's expectations. Our series on clothing and culture continues. Plus, the complicated relationship between wine prices and wine quality. How to be sure you're getting the best of the barrel. The Kojo Nnamdi Show, noon till 2 tomorrow on WAMU 88.5.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt McCleskey.